If you enjoyed podcasts like this, you should check out our other shows on Health Podcast Network. For example, Medicine in America, hosted by Anthony Manson and Todd Harrington, shares the stories of physicians, other healthcare professionals, and industry leaders who are changing the way we deliver care. There's an episode that you should check out called Primary Care Reimagined with Subscription-Based Preventative Care Model. It's an inspiring call for a paradigm shift in primary care. All of their episodes highlight innovative ideas at the forefront of the movement to transform our healthcare system. Check out Medicine in America on your favorite podcast platform or visit healthpodcastnetwork.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Raj Sundar, a family physician and a community organizer. You're listening to Healthcare for Humans, the show dedicated to educating you on how to care for culturally diverse communities so you can be a better healer. This is about everything that you wish you knew to really care for the person in front of you, not just a body system. Let's learn together. Welcome back to our three-part series on latent TB. The first episode was an introduction to latent TB and how to effectively communicate about it. You heard from Frankie and Mohammed in the previous episode talking about this eloquently. We discussed the nuances of communicating about TB, exploring analogies, language choices, and understanding important concepts like latent TB treatment might not be everyone's top priority as they navigate and try to survive their daily life as an immigrant or a refugee. We discussed this in generalities, though, and a key takeaway was recognizing the unique aspects of each community and how that could completely change what it means to care for them. That's the premise of this whole podcast, that understanding each community's background and individual experiences changes how you care for them. So today, in the second episode of our series, we're zooming in on a specific community, the Congolese community. This will help us truly understand what it means to understand a community's history and perspective before solving a quote-unquote problem. Jean-Jacques, Director of Interpreter Services at a local medical center, will guide us through this today. First, I want you to imagine you're a clinician or public health professional tasked with addressing the latent TB crisis within a Congolese community. You just received a one-year grant to ramp up screening and make sure people are connected to appropriate treatment resources. You've distributed flyers, set up mobile clinics, even gotten on radio, talking about how important it is, how urgent this is. But 6 months in, you find that none of your efforts seem to be working. What's going on? Well, if you had listened to Jean-Jacques before designing your program, you might have had a better grasp of the questions the community was actually asking. In my homeland, TB meant coughing and weight loss. Immigration authorities already cleared me, so why am I now being told I might have sleeping TB? What does that even mean? Back home, HIV and TB clinics often operated together. Will I be sent to the same kind of clinic here? Will I have to undergo observed therapy daily in the hospital? And does that mean my friends may think I have HIV when I'm getting treated for TB? Where I come from, TB treatment lasts 9 months. So why are they suggesting 12 weeks here? Do they actually know what they're talking about? And I'm supposed to not drink alcohol during treatment, which means no drinking during Christmas? My community will surely notice and question why I'm not drinking in an important holiday, and I'll have to answer them, and then they'll find out. And just a one-year grant, so they're going to be gone next year anyway? Maybe it's not that important after all. Just a few examples. Did you think about these perspectives? Did you even know about any of this? Would your approach have differed if you had? Or better yet, would you have co-created your program with Congolese leaders and physicians in the community on what this could look like? Or maybe even pastor and faith leaders in the community? You may not be solving this exact problem, but you'll see how listening deeply to the community will always let you start from a different place compared to where we often start from. From a place of earned technical expertise with degrees and expectations and logic models, you name it. But these are almost never enough to make the change we want. We will have a guest interviewer today, Duncan Reed. He's the medical director of Ethnomad. And Ethnomad, you've heard about it before, is a resource center that provides information about cultural beliefs, medical issues, and other topics related to the healthcare of immigrants to the U.S., many of whom are refugees. Thank you, Duncan, for interviewing many of the community leaders for this project. Without further delay, here's Duncan Reed and Jean-Jacques talking about what it means to address latent TB in the Congolese community.
Who are you?
My name is Jean-Jacques Kayembe. I use him pronoun. I am the new director of Interpreter Service at Abbeville Medical Center. And I am a strong advocate for language access and community outreach. And I do a lot of work supporting immigrants and refugees in especially South King County, but all over the state of Washington. The essential health services never exist in many countries, or it was expensive. They couldn't afford it. The only time they went to the hospital when they have a serious medical condition. We can talk about how the system is bad for many Americans here who grew up and lived here. They can have access to healthcare. But those immigrants who came from Africa, coming here with zero health services, they surprised to have full of opportunity of services. And now they become hesitant. Is this really free to help me, or just free because they want to trick me and make me something bad? And this is the discussion in the community. Well, how this is so free? How the vaccine is free available? And they forced me to get this vaccine. What's the reason behind it? There's a public reason, but we need to work with the community to convince those people. This is free. It's not going to harm you. It's for your well-being, to protect you and your family. This is where we should focus on getting the information to the community, especially those newly established immigrants here, because they didn't know that it's free. Is to help them and also their community.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I think what we're realizing with this project too is each community is quite different. Like the Marshallese, for example, had big WHO program. They had big surveillance program at home, so they're used to that. Whereas you're saying like these other countries, they're not used to it.
I think one of the problems also because the funding for the TB program back in DRC is through Global Fund. It's because the government don't subsidize treatment of TB. It's through Global Fund, which is the major donor for all the medical disease in DRC. So they fund HIV, malaria elimination, and TB. So the clinic receiving funds focus more on HIV and TB. Since in DRC, the most recurrent co-infection of HIV is TB and hepatitis B, most of the clinic are featured to be HIV clinics. So those TB people go to be seen in HIV clinic. This is when the stigma starts. You can go to be seen for a TB concern, but because you go in an HIV clinic, people will target you as having HIV. And also because in DRC, there is the direct observer therapy when the people with TB have to go to the hospital every day to be observed by a nurse and taking the TB medication. Guess what? When they see you coming every day in an HIV clinic, they become suspicious. Why are you going to this clinic? Or what medicine you're taking every day? They know HIV medication is for life. It's a lifetime treatment. People become suspicious. And you cannot bring those medication home. They will see you taking 7-8 pills once every single day in the morning. It's tedious. And people are reluctant. They don't want to talk about it. They hide themselves sometimes. They call the provider, hey, can you bring the medicine home? Or bring someone in my house if you are wealthy enough. So they can see me taking my medication, but I don't want to go to this clinic. And when they come here, it's the same process. They will prescribe the medicine. They will ask you to come to the hospital. Sometimes they can give you this medicine and they will track you every day to make sure you're taking the medication. But people don't want it. If it's more than 4 medication, it could be either TB or HIV medication. And people are like, is it? Why are we taking so many medication? It becomes concerning. So people hide their disease. They don't want to expose themselves because they are ashamed.
Wow, that's really helpful. Because yeah. I think the big question is much bigger than TB.
Exactly.
But I'm hoping that this approach can at least increase engagement so that we can talk about other things later.
Exactly, yeah. I think we need to start a conversation seriously and engage community to see what happened, what their experience, what are their frustration about those diseases, and see from there how we can tailor approach. But having them on the table and discuss what we can do to help them, because the goal is to protect the community and to stop the spread of disease, because we know latent TB is in our community. Yeah, we can know how we can effectively treat people who don't show up, speak up to get treated.
Yeah, and that's just latent TB. There's so much misunderstanding about latent TB, but then talk about hepatitis B, where even as a medical professional, it's very confusing, right? And then the other infectious disease like Strongyloides, Schistosomiasis. Is there a big name for tuberculosis in Congo?
In French, they call it tuberculosis. In Lingala, they call it Maladia Pema because they're referring to breathing problem and cough caused by the TB infections. So if someone is telling you, okay, I have Maladia Pema, then they report cough and weight loss. Those two key elements are already the trigger for people to know, there's a problem here. You should go to the hospital. If you keep losing weight and keep having this cough, people become concerned and will ask you to go to see a doctor.
Is TB associated with any particular group of people, or do people feel like it could happen to anyone?
At first, it could become to happen to everyone. But in the past 10 years, with the census and the study done in the US, especially Kinshasa, they realized 1/3 of the active TB cases were inmates. And there is like the largest TB hospital close to the largest jail center in Kinshasa. And many young people who have been arrested for 6 months at least end up having active TB. So now the government is working on see how they can isolate people properly in a jail system to ensure that they can catch TB. But most people have been either active TB or latent TB after being in jail for at least minimum 6 months.
Is the community aware of that connection between?
Not at all. There is not enough information, not enough communication. And also the transportation can be an issue because in DRC, especially in Kinshasa, it's like a huge city of 12 million people. The transportation is a big deal and people can be in a region when someone is endemic and they don't know about it. So the government don't talk about it much. And people here, when they come, they don't want to talk. They want to say they went to jail. There are some area when TB is really endemic. And coming from this region make people suspicious of TB.
Hey, that's really helpful. How about latent TB? That was a big issue that we've been confronting, is that a lot of communities, I think even in the US, a lot of Americans don't know that difference between active TB and latent TB. Is that something that anyone knows about?
Not at all. No. People have no information. In DRC, all we have TB or don't have it. In the past 5 years, we've seen this concept of latent TB introduced by the program because they realized there is an increasing incidence of latent TB. And they're starting with WHO push. They redefined the definition of TB in a new program in DRC. But the community doesn't know about it. If you go to the hospital for a cough, they say you have to take TB treatment. Guess what? You have TB. They don't make a differentiation if it's an active or a latent TB. But the scientific community and the medical community in DRC are aware there's a latent TB and active TB. But the community, no.
So people that are getting screened here, I imagine there's a degree of confusion if
yes.
you get a positive screening test.
Yeah, for two reasons. First reason, because some of the people who immigrate legally in the U.S. before coming to the U.S. Embassy require people to get the TB screening test done. They got the skin test and the x-ray, and they are reviewed by a medical provider and cleared. So if you're cleared by U.S. Embassy, you receive a visa to come to the U.S., and you come to a clinic, they tell you have latent TB, you're not going to trust. Why people at the U.S. Embassy clear me, say that I don't have TB, they give me a visa to come to the U.S., and you telling me I have a TB, I'm not going to trust you. If I had TB or latent TB, they could not give me a visa. Because it's clear, if you have those infectious diseases, you cannot receive a visa. But those people receive a visa to come to the U.S. They get all the screening for Hep B, HIV, and TB. They got cleared by the U.S. Embassy. It's really concerning. We need to see how we can address this issue.
Yeah, that comes up a lot. I think the other thing that comes up a lot is the BCG vaccine. There's a lot of understanding that the BCG vaccine can cause false positive skin tests.
Mm-hmm.
The Iraqi community that we interviewed, they were saying the BCG they felt was completely protective. So they said, I'm not at risk of any TB because I got BCG vaccine. Do you have a good sense of how most people get BCG vaccine in the Congo?
Yes, it's one of the required vaccinations people get within 12 hours or the first day of birth. It's mandatory.
Do you have any sense of, do people feel like it's completely protective, partially protective?
Yes, most of the people, especially if you're healthy, never have been exposed to like community when TB is endemic, they feel really protective of it. They say, okay, I get the BCG, I'm protected.
How about the positives with the skin test with BCG vaccine?
People are confused. I was also confused because I've been tested many times in the US because I want to work in healthcare field. And one of the requirements for you to get the BCG, to get the skin test, and it was always more than 10 millimeters, so it'll be positive. And then they're going to, unfortunately, DRC don't do the lab test to confirm. If the skin test is positive, you have TB, they would start your treatment right away. They don't do the blood.
From the conversations here, it seems like a lot of healthcare facilities are still doing the skin testing as well. And that was creating confusion. And it seemed like a lot of communities were not even aware of this QuantiFERON blood testing.
Yes, they are not aware. They are not because they are not given the option. They didn't know that. So if the skin test is positive, the next step is to do the blood tests. And also if the provider has a suspicion about history of cough, then they can order an X-ray to ensure there was nothing suspicious. In my case, they did an X-ray and a CT scan. And because the 20-fern was undetermined and the skin test was positive, I was forced to take TB medication. If I know for sure I was never exposed, I've been here in this country for more than 7 years. I was clear in the army when I served. I received all of my vaccine, but they asked me to go through the treatment because sometimes the test can be undetermined. And this is where I also need to fill the gap in explaining why it's important for people to provide accurate information so that people aren't frustrated, which was my case.
So just to go back through your history, just to go into the U.S. military, you're getting probably skin tests and X-ray?
Yes, we get all the testing, all the required vaccines. I have 15 shots in one day. We get vaccine against anthrax, all those like bioterrorism things to protect you. And you go to the rigorous screening, Hep B, Hep C, Hep A. You receive those vaccines, you go to X-ray, they go the TB test again, and they got the blood TB test. And if there was a suspicion, they would put right away in treatment. That was not my case. And every year they do like annual review of the health screening of all the soldiers. So for at least 6 years, I've been screened for the same disease all over and again. And when you get out of the military, you go to a primary care provider, ask you, no, you have to redo the test and you have to take this treatment. The same system, the same country. And I was confused and I was frustrated because I say I want to take this medication, but I was forced to take the medication because I couldn't enroll for school and finish my MPH because one of the requirements for me to finish is to enroll for the last quarter. And I couldn't enroll for class because the provider didn't clear me up that I didn't have a TB. You know, wow. And it was a really frustration. I can imagine people being frustrated about this situation because I was frustrated.
And to clarify, you're a medical doctor.
Yes.
You have your MPH.
Yes.
You've been working in communicable diseases.
Yes.
Now with the health department, and it was a source of confusion and frustration for you.
Exactly, yes.
So the main point is, if it's a frustration or confusion for you, what is it for the average person, let alone average immigrant who's coming in, getting maybe unclear messaging?
Exactly, and not speaking English. That's another detail, because there's information on that culturally translated in those Lingala or French correct appropriately. It's hard to put in words what the provider is saying to the patient. And people are so confused about the message because TB is well-known disease by the community low-income countries because they explain that it's a serious disease. They talk about in the news and they put the key point. If you have those symptoms, you have to go to the hospital because the treatment is free. If you have the TB, they know how many months you have to take the medication. So everybody's aware of those. HIV, TB, malaria, because it's our like the killers in low-income countries. So everybody at least will grow up, have some information about the disease. But here now, when they come to this country, they have some understanding. But when you tell them latent TB, they ask you to take 3 months of treatment only when they know they have to take meds for 6 months, sometimes for 9 months of a year, they are confused. Why should I take only 3 months if I do have TB? If I have TB, I have to take it for longer than that. But you tell me, oh, it's just because the TB is sleeping. How the TB is sleeping in someone's body? I grew up knowing that if you have a TB, you have it, you have to be treated to be clear. But here they tell me my TB is sleeping and they give me 2 months treatment. Is that treatment accurate or not? Those questions, and me as an educator in my community, I can't answer those. I try to find a word to explain it, but I can't convince them because they know that TB is a serious disease. If you have it, you need to take at least 6 months of treatment. But here, they tell me I have a sleeping TB and I've only taken medication for 12 weeks, 3 months. Who should I trust? This is the tough question we need to ask and find a way to answer so that the community feels safe to go through the process if they have latent TB to take the medication.
So I think the most important thing that you're highlighting is there's a messaging campaign that's already done in all of these different countries, and it's not with the messaging that we have here.
Exactly.
And that's where a lot of this confusion arises. And just going back to your case, you are getting screened with a particular regimen in the U.S. military. You get out, you enroll in a healthcare program. Because of that, you undergo repeat skin testing.
Mm-hmm.
Chest x-ray is still clear.
Yeah.
They do QuantiFERON, which was indeterminate, mm-hmm. and probably repeat it. And because of that, they say, well, you can't even do your studies unless you do treatment. We're hearing very similar things amongst at least the Kenyan community. They say a lot of them work in the healthcare industry. So that's why as MAs, PCAs, and they said that's why they're getting tested.
Exactly.
And what they said was they're getting skin tests. Mm-hmm. They get chest x-ray, which is clear. So they say, oh, the skin test is positive because of BCG. Therefore, the understanding is that you don't need treatment, even though they're being told to take treatment. And when people were asking you questions, is it as a friend? Is it because they know that you're a medical professional in the community? Or
yes, because they know I'm a medical professional and also because they can trust me. And that's why they come ask me those questions. Sometimes they text me and want to talk to you. And I think the good thing about our community, if they know you're a medical doctor, especially trained back home, they will trust your judgment. They will trust whatever you tell them to do. So what I do most of the time is to refer them to their primary care doctor if they don't have one. Ask them to connect to a local clinic to see if they can be helped.
And I guess the loop that we're trying to close here potentially is talk to some of those primary care providers in those clinics and say, hey, these are some of the stumbling things. These are the barriers to understanding because of this like discordance of information through WHO. I think lack of education of latent TB until you come to the US, something.
Yeah, also we need probably use also the train foreign doctors, nurses who came from those countries because they also give insights and advice to people. If we can work with them to communicate the message about latent TB or HPV or HIV, that would be helpful because many people trust them first before going to the clinic. So if someone that's like me, I have to be a practitioner back in DRC, if I have the information, that's why when I organize those community events, people come because they recognize me, they can trust what I'm telling them to do. And this is why it's important to use people like me, some other leader who have some medical background from back home. They can explain clearly to the community why this is important, why this public health message is important, why treating someone for latent TB is critical, not for only for them, but for their family and for their community.
I think that's a great point. We met so many Congolese physicians from back home that came here that don't have any credentials. But I think one way to help use their expertise would be for community outreach.
Exactly.
And building them. How about in the community when someone is diagnosed with TB, it sounds like at least back home people know because they see someone getting DOT.
Mm-hmm.
How about out here? Feel like
people don't know. They hide it. You go to the primary care doctor, you get some medication. Like it was my case. I was taking my medicine and my nurse was calling me every week to see what I was doing, or I feel good, or if you're an issue. And it went 12 weeks, nobody knew I was fine. I was going to my class. I was reduced from my class. I was able to finish my MPH while taking my medicine. And it was fine. Nobody knew, except my wife. My kid didn't know I was taking medicine. I was taking early in the morning, 6 a.m. when everybody had asleep. Everybody in my house asleep. Before going to the campus, I was taking medicine. So I can imagine if you got your medicine, you will hide them because we feel embarrassed today.
Yeah. How was that experience? Do you think a recent immigrant from the DRC would be able to go through that treatment process that you went through?
No. Yes, if someone guide him, like I can discuss with that person to tell that person how important it is to take this medicine and check on him every week to make sure he's taking a medicine. And also, if he's married, having his wife as a support to not remind him, especially on the weekend, okay. Don't go to the bar, don't invite people home because you're going to drink alcohol and it's not good for when you take those TB medicine. It's like 12 weeks of really tough when Congolese and African people have to celebrate on weekends, especially if they ask you to take medicine during holidays. That means Christmas, and if you don't drink and hang out with friends because of what's going on. Why you don't drink beer? No, I don't feel good. Okay, you don't feel good one day, but the next day, why you don't drink? oh, I'm taking this medicine. And what kind of medicine you cannot take it?
It'd be possible if someone was diagnosed and had this treatment regimen and didn't believe in taking it. Would it be possible just not to take the medication and give the impression that you completed a course?
Yes.
Of latent TB?
Yes, because there is no way to track. After that, they don't do any sort of test after you finish your treatment here. They just clear, okay, they give you X amount of medicine. You took them after a while. Okay, good. You can throw them in the garbage. Nobody will know. And like you say, it's a waste of money and resources because there is no way to track if someone is taking the treatment. So it's an issue. When putting some people in treatment, how to track and to ensure that those people are taking the medication. The direct observed therapy was the best options, but not everybody can go to the hospital every day to get seen. I don't have time for that. I have to work. I have to feed my family. So I'm not going to make it. You're going to give me the medication, trusting me to take it. And you have no way to track.
And if the patient doesn't trust the provider or that information, I ask that question because I know the isoniazid-containing regimens have a lot of side effects.
Yes.
And my suspicion, we've gone all to 4 months of rifampin in our clinic because of the greater tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
My suspicion is that a lot of people don't complete the regimen.
No, right. Don't, because it's not sustainable. It's difficult. It's also one of the reasons why the TB is so endemic in low-income countries, because the disease doesn't fit with the social norm of the community or the society. When African community used to hang out on a weekend, celebrate, be with friends, they always enjoy food and drinks. And this medication will stop you for X amount of time to have a social life. And if you don't have a social life, people become suspicious. You have something concerning and people won't try to avoid you. And you get avoided in the community, and guess what? In work also, they will avoid you. They will like maybe suspend you or just take you away until you feel back to connect to the community.
Yeah, that's a great point. Anything else about the community's beliefs about TB that I didn't ask you?
There is also now this religious component that if you have this TB, you go to church, the pastor is going to pray for you, and this disease is going to disappear. There's been a myth that has been spread by religious people, especially those evangelical churches, that Jesus will heal you, heal everything. I'm going to pray for it, and it's going to disappear. And this is something we need to stop because it's become really alarming when seeing people having complications because they don't trust the healthcare system and because they trust more their pastors than the healthcare system. This is why also we need to engage pastors in the discussion and faith leaders just to educate them first so that they believe this is going to happen. Then they can convey the message. They will tell, okay, God say he's going to heal you, but God's going to heal you by you taking this medicine. It's a different message and people will trust because I realize in the Congress community, people trust more the pastors sometimes than providers.
And it sounds like these pastors or preachers actually have a good sense of what's going on in the community. They hear all the stories.
They hear a lot because they are trust members. They speak in the name of Jesus and people can trust them easily. Most of them were Catholics, but because many churches preach in English and they become more customized to many evangelical churches here, led by Congolese pastors and preachers.
Interesting. Hmm. What are the main health concerns do you think people from the DRC feel?
Communicable disease, especially STD, still ramping in Congolese community, but people don't talk about it because, especially immigrants, we went through a lot of sexual trafficking, a lot of stress. Some of them become pregnant and they have a lot of STDs. And also chronic diseases, diabetes, high blood pressure, especially those two diseases are really rising in many Congolese. We have someone in the community who had a stroke in the early 40s. He didn't believe he could have a stroke because his dad had a stroke when he was 70. How he can have a stroke in his 40s is something people don't want to talk about because if you have a stroke in this age, it's not good. People don't talk enough about those issues.
So you gave us, I think, a lot ideas of how to expand what we're doing right now. I think I've told you, I think it's mostly just listening to community members from each community around TB. But it sounds like what you're really highlighting is the importance to make connections with particularly the faith, trust leaders of the community.
Yes.
To understand what's going on, to get real feedback probably from each community about what's going on.
Yes.
And then hopefully making a connection with the providers.
Yes.
Do you have any other concrete recommendations? And I think trying earnestly to get information.
And sustain this effort, because sometimes public health stop because of the funding issue. And sustain this effort to become permanent and people can remember this. This is why like TB, HIV, malaria in long time, it became a permanent issue. Everybody's aware because there was this constant reminder in the community. Every year there are some sort of campaign, information, you can find them everywhere. So cannot forget there is those diseases. Everybody in the RC, for instance, have a bed net at home because it's free. When they fund it, they advertise it many ways, different color, just to remind people malaria exists. Malaria is a killer. So we need to do this. They use all the different channels. Now we have churches, we have faith leaders, we have people, through a medical provider here or foreign medical provider, they can use them and continue this work in the community. If we keep pushing, doing a lot of outreach, speaking to the community, be present in the community during these big events, celebrations, go to the community, be with them, understand their challenge, then probably we're going to have a success to have a really community open to receive public health intervention and treatments. And also us having the healthcare provider really understand the reality of each community, having like maybe a roadmap for the provider in a clinic. Okay, if you see a Congolese patient, this is what the cultural norm is. This is the question you should avoid because this one not going to gain trust for the community. Don't judge those people, especially those immigrant or refugee people, because of the stigma and stigma. For instance, people coming from the Eastern DRC, many of them are sexually abused and they don't want to talk about STD, for instance, the first day in a medical clinic when they come for the first time. Don't ask them for HIV tests because maybe she had been sexually assaulted when she was in DRC by those rebel people, or ask for STD. She'll tell you she's fine. Gain trust first, and once she becomes pregnant or have some issues, then you can explore with those STD issues. On the first visit, you don't ask those questions to that female because she had seen worse in her lifetime when she was in DRC. Many providers will ask you, hey, what's your sexual activity? She's fine. That's the question of the triggers for that like really traumatic event they went through when they were in DRC.
Maybe a really promising next step would be just find these providers from DRC that we can talk to and learn from them just how things work back home.
Yes.
How they approach things and then incorporate them into whatever campaign. Because like you said, there have been successful campaigns in DRC. So to emulate those and then to get expert opinion on the effectiveness of them from providers from that country.
Okay. Yeah. And ask those providers, especially those primary care providers, to use ethnomed resources. Because this is important. That's valuable information. Sometimes providers don't have time to look into the information first. And if they have questions, to reach out to those who have worked with those communities in the past or work in long-term countries to get insight so they can give some insight about those communities. Instead of having a blank form of the question, Western-based approach on treating those people, it's quite different. It's like we bring Africa here in the U.S. You need to treat them according to what they have believe, tradition, and culture. It's really important to tailor those approach.
So in the same way that the Congolese community goes to you informally for advice, maybe we can have something similar where the clinicians in the community can have someone they go to informally and say,
exactly,
hey, I have this person from the Congo. I'm having these issues with whatever treatment I'm sending on this. Can you guide me?
Yes.
And it's easy to have one or two conversations, but it's much more difficult to have a longitudinal
presence. Yeah. And in our side, we need to ask for more funding. Because the problem with African communities, when they trust an institution and they know they can rely on them, you must be present all the time. You create some expectation. Now we're trying to create expectation. We want to help them, we need to provide information. When we provide information one time, the second time, and guess what? They will trust us. We cannot tell them, okay, we don't have enough funding. Now we don't have funds, we cannot help you because we don't have funds. So we need to find in our side a way to sustain this effort and to continue this work with the community, because once we create this bridge, we cannot break this bridge. We need to continue to work. And this is the most challenging part for us. Keep funding this program and this project so that we can help the community. Because if we gain trust, It's really hard to break those. And once you break it, rebuilding bridge is really challenging because in African culture, there's this saying, it's nothing's important in trust. I can lose friends, I can lose money, but if I have family, this is most important. We create a family connection with them. And this is most important. They can come to us asking for questions, for resources, but we cannot tell them we don't have resources because we don't have funding. They don't understand that. They know we are an institution, we have resources, we have people, and they don't understand that we run on a budget based on a grant we receive. They don't care about it. They want the resource. Since we provide them one time, they know they can come next time to receive it. The next generation also know our parents told us there is a resource here, so let's go and reach out to get those resources. So we need to find a way to sustain this effort, not to rely on grant, of course, but having a level, a state level who can support this generation and next generation will come, have a laid ground of knowledge and expertise that can support them.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks again, everyone, for joining me on another episode of Healthcare for Humans. Thank you to Public Health, Seattle, and King County TB Clinic for sponsoring this series. If you like this episode, as always, my ask to you is please share it with one other person and go to healthcareforhumans.org to sign up to be part of the community.
If you enjoy podcasts like this, you should check out our other shows on Health Podcast Network. For example, Medicine in America, hosted by Anthony Manson and Todd Harrington, shares the stories of physicians, other healthcare professionals, and industry leaders who are changing the way we deliver care. There's an episode that you should check out called Primary Care Reimagined with Subscription-Based Preventative Care Model. It's an inspiring call for a paradigm shift in primary care. All of their episodes highlight innovative ideas at the forefront of the movement to transform our healthcare system. Check out Medicine in America on your favorite podcast platform or visit healthpodcastnetwork.com.